A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, happy Saturday, everybody. Happy 4th of July. Hopefully you have great big plans for today, and we thank you for starting the day with the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. We've got a lot of cool stuff planned, but before I tell you what's coming up, I do want to get to a story, something that happened to me over the course of this week. And I guess I should mention the fact that, of course, obviously, Betsy isn't here today. She's recovering from her surgery, and hopefully she's back soon, because this is very strange to be doing this with nobody else to respond to. But anyway, she would appreciate this story. I hope she hears it. So Betsy, if you're listening here, I wish you were here to respond to this, but the kids and I have been taking bike rides every morning at 5:45 a.m. That's what the kids want to do. They want to get up at 5:45, make coffee, and then put it all in a backpack and a thermos, and then pedal somewhere and find a picnic table and then sit there and have coffee. But the other day, I'm pedaling around. I'm without my glasses. So when I don't have my glasses, you know, everything is a blur. I don't see a whole lot. And as we're going, I can see this creature on the path ahead of us, you know, like a cat. And so I told the kids, there's a cat up ahead. Well, they all screeched to a halt. I heard them, you know, the gravel under their tires, and I heard them yelling something, but I kept pedaling towards the little creature, and I noticed the creature was making moves towards me. I figured it was a very friendly cat. And then all of it came together, their screams, and the creature came into clarity, you know, as I got close enough to see, and I realized it was a skunk in the middle of Zealand. I never expected to see a skunk, but let me tell you, the absolute sheer abject terror that took place at that moment. All I could think about was having to take a bath in tomato soup and realizing that I don't have enough tomato soup to really get much of anything washed. I've got 3 cans. How far is that going to go if I've been sprayed head to toe by a skunk? Anyway, I averted the skunk. I survived the experience. But I kind of wished when it was all over that maybe somebody had been sprayed, because I think it would have been funnier. But I'm glad it wasn't me. I guess that's all I can say. Anyway, that was my big news for the week. Like I said, it's more fun if Betsy's here to make fun of me during it, but we'll just have to imagine that in spirit. Now, coming up on the show this week, we're going to talk about Thomas Jefferson, interior designer, and then we're going to talk about Benjamin Franklin, some history of the man, and then some home improvement quotes from him. But right now, let's transition into an old segment about Yankee Doodle, and it will reference the music that started the show. Yankee Doodle, right?
Yes, yes.
It's the quintessential.
Yeah, kids learn it when you're like in elementary school.
Right, yeah. And I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I remember...
Yes.
And maybe I was just dumber than most of the rest of the children, which is entirely possible.
Okay.
Let's just leave it there. It's possible. But anyway, every time we had to sing this little song,
mm-hmm.
in my head, I play through the line. I can't remember the line.
Stuck a feather in
went
his cap.
Went to town riding on a pony.
Yeah.
Stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni. It made no sense to me. Makes no sense at all. All I could picture is he's running around with macaroni and cheese on
right.
his hat.
I think
what
most kids think that.
Is the point.
Right.
Well, the thing is, mm-hmm. we did a little research. And again, maybe we're dumber than most. Maybe most of you already know this. But there's a whole history behind the song. And there's so many interesting things. Like, first off,
mm-hmm.
the song, while it is considered quintessentially patriotic,
right.
was actually created for the opposite purposes. By the British, right? I mean, or they took the song
right.
and put their own lyrics to it
mm-hmm.
to make fun of
right.
the colonists
mm-hmm.
who were at war.
Right.
You know, because that's what you do. I mean, you kill people, but
right.
you also make fun of them
then
as much
as you
can.
Then you make fun of them to make
or
them
you
feel
make
really
fun of
bad.
Them first and then makes it easier.
Right.
I think that was the plan.
Right.
But anyway, so what does this mean? Yankee
mm-hmm.
Doodle.
Kay.
Well, first off, Yankee, of course. We know where that comes
yes.
from. Doodle was just meant to be some kind of country bumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where that comes from.
Yeah.
So he goes to town,
uh-huh.
and he's riding on what, Betsy?
A pony.
A pony. Not a real horse.
No.
Remember
pony.
How many times do I talk about riding anything, and it's always
yes,
a pony?
Right.
That's what I always think
yes,
of.
It is.
So yes, this...
Generally a miniature
it's
pony.
Meant to, well, they're the only ones that I can get on
right.
without needing a standing, a box to get
right,
up on them.
Right.
Anyway, so he's riding to town on his Shetland pony,
uh-huh.
and he sticks a feather in his cap and calls it macaroni. All
yes.
right? So that's where it kind of breaks down.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting
yeah.
is that in Britain, in Europe, there's this point where this coming of age thing during during this time period where young men or the young people would travel the world.
And they started a grand tour.
Right. A grand tour is what it was called. They will come back and now they're appropriating lots of different fashion elements that they've seen throughout their travels. And it's basically their way of demonstrating how worldly, how sophisticated they are.
Right.
And the thing is, what they did was they really, really dandied themselves up.
Yes.
Right. So great big wigs and big fluffy clothes. I mean, picture the French Revolution stuff, the elite, the monarchy with all the makeup and the powder and the all of that. That's what they're starting to do. There's this movement in Britain that this is happening. And it was very like shocking, you know, for the rest of the Brits.
Yes.
They see this group, these young people.
What are they thinking?
Fancy get up. Well, anyway, what they eventually came to be called was the macaroni.
Right.
I think part of it was because that was one of their favorite foods that they came up with, right? I think I read that.
Yes.
Anyway, whatever the reason for the name, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
So, back to the song. Yankee Doodle sticks a feather in his hat. He can't get all fancy.
Right.
And he thinks that he's macaroni now. He thinks he is the elite.
He thinks he's been on the grand tour and he's sophisticated.
Right. It is a complete slam of who we are. So that's where the song comes from.
Right.
But what's really fun is this funny little twist, this little irony that history has a way of bringing about.
Right.
Is when Cornwallis surrenders to Washington at Yorktown in 1781. He's greeted by the colonists singing this song because we adopted it at that point.
Right.
And we completely appropriated it and threw it back in his face when they surrendered.
Well, apparently
how awesome is that?
We appropriate a lot of songs because if you think about, if you have ever heard the song that they play in Britain, God Save the Queen or God Save the King, depending on what they have, it's a song from like 1731, 1741, something like that. Well, if you think of patriotic songs and start singing to yourself, "My country 'tis of thee," you will find that they have exactly the same tune.
Did we steal that on purpose?
Well, the gentleman charged with writing the lyrics to that song in 1831, almost 100 years after the tune was put out there, he did not know that that was the song that they play for British royalty.
Oh, he didn't know. That's even better.
He did not know.
So he just happens to,
yeah, they give him this piece of music and they say, write lyrics for this. And this is what he comes up with.
Did they tell him to write a patriotic song?
Yes, I believe so. Yep. And then they had some school children singing.
Somebody was aware.
Yes. And
somebody
it was like for a 4th of July celebration, I believe, the first time they brought it out. So
well, that is really fun.
Yeah. So we like to take British songs and kind of, you know, make them our own.
Yeah. So we're going to take a couple Beatles songs and make those the new Repcolite Home Improvement Show theme songs.
Might as well.
Yeah. I'm a loser. Right? That's the first. That was my son's walk-up song in baseball on the high school team. His first year.
Okay.
That was the song he chose. I thought that was brilliantly funny. Music.
Brings us all together.
It brings us all around. Now, coming up after the break, we're digging into Benjamin Franklin, a little history on the man. That's coming up next. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Welcome back to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show Holiday Extravaganza, the 4th of July blowout. I don't know if blowout's the right word. That doesn't really sound like a positive blowout. No, I can't think of being a parent. One thing comes to mind when I think about blowouts. And yeah, it involved diapers and they were never positive. So let's just erase that word from our memories in regards to this episode. Let's not have this episode be a blowout akin to what parents are accustomed to dealing with. Let's just make this an extravaganza and call it that. So 4th of July, extravaganza with the Repcolite Home Improvement Show. We started talking about Yankee Doodle and the story behind the song. So not a whole lot of home improvement stuff in that, but maybe some historically interesting things. Now we want to dig into some Benjamin Franklin historic quotes that can be applied to home improvement stuff. And I'm going to get to that in the next segment, because right now I want to kind of build on Benjamin Franklin and just basically refresh our minds about who this guy was. Because really, of all of the founding fathers, and for me, the Revolution, you know, all of the history around the Revolutionary War has always been some of my favorite history. You know, the characters are so vivid, so bigger than life. George Washington, John Adams, Samuel Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, all of those people were just so monumentally important, and the brains that they had, the foresight to see, you know, to have this vision of what a country could be, and then the ability to work for that, to sacrifice for that, to fight for that, and then to craft that vision and basically lay the groundwork for what we have today. That's just really stunning. The whole thing is stunning to explore and study. And Benjamin Franklin, amongst all of those giants, has always been one that, for me, is bigger than all of them. You know, in my mind, he always stood out above all of them just because of everything the guy did. So Benjamin Franklin, he's described by a noted historian, Perry Miller, as the most massively symbolic figure in American history. Now, we've all heard of him. Like I said, we know something about him usually. Almost all of us do. But here's a quick refresher on the whole scope of his life. He was born in Boston in 1706. We always associate Philadelphia with Benjamin Franklin, but he was actually born in Boston. He was the 15th of 17 children. 15th of 17 children. His father made candles and soap. And of all of the crafts or the trades at the time, that was one of the lowliest of them all. Benjamin Franklin actually apprenticed under his father for a while. Not very long, but a little bit. Now, one other note before we move on to some of his accomplishments. He was born in an age where the firstborn son was a big deal. You know, that was the son who had the way paved ahead for him a little bit. And Benjamin Franklin noted in his autobiography that he was the youngest son of the youngest son, five generations running. So not just the youngest son, but five generations back, the youngest son of the youngest son. So if anybody had the deck stacked against him a little bit, maybe we could say Franklin did. Now, he started with little formal education. He started school when he was 8, and he ended it when he was 10. So that was the limit of his formal education, 2 years. He was an avid reader, and he taught himself to be a writer. When he was 12, he quit with his father, you know, working in the candle and soap making business, and he transitioned to working with his brother as a printer. At age 16, Franklin starts contributing essays to his brother's newspaper, but he's using a pseudonym, you know, a pen name. He's writing as Silence Dugood, which, if you've watched the National Treasure movies, at least the first one with Nicolas Cage, you should be aware of Silence Dugood, because that those letters play into unraveling whatever mystery they were trying to unravel. Anyway, Franklin really did write these letters, and his pen name was Silence Dugood. And what makes it really funny is that Silence Dugood was actually a middle-aged woman that Franklin created. So you've got this 16-year-old kid writing with the voice, let's say, of a middle-aged woman. Hilarious stuff, really, when you think about it. It's starting to show his humor and his wit already at that point. Now, it's not long after that he opens up his own printing shop in Philadelphia, and then he eventually goes on to publish what became one of his more famous publications, Poor Richard's Almanac. Now, Franklin was constantly working to improve himself and his adopted city of Philadelphia, where he had settled. He launched a lending library. He worked to establish a hospital and a college. He worked to create pensions. He built institutions for the mentally disabled. He did all of those things, working to better himself and his community. He was also, as most of us are aware, a scientist and inventor. You know, we know about the experiments with the kite to prove that lightning is electricity. You know, there were maybe safer ways that had been done in the past, but he really, really jumped in with both feet when he threw a kite up into there. He invented lightning rods to prevent fires and all of that. He charted the Gulf Stream. He invented the Franklin stove. He invented bifocals. And this was kind of interesting. He invented a musical instrument called the glass harmonica. And basically what it was is he had noticed how people would use glassware at parties or at events, at dinners, to make sounds. You know, you put wet your finger and run it around the rim of the glass and it makes a sound. Well, Franklin created this device that's basically a whole bunch of different sized glassware, And that's what you would do. It would crank, and then you'd use your finger on different pieces, and it would create different sounds. It sounds really fun and interesting when you first listen to it. And after about 5 minutes of listening to it, you've got a pounding headache. So I don't know that it had a long life ahead of it. And in fact, it turns out it really didn't. But one interesting thing is that Beethoven and Mozart actually wrote music for this invention, this instrument that Franklin invented. So there you go. There's something interesting. Finally, besides being a philanthropist and somebody bettering himself in society and being an inventor, Franklin, of course, was a founding father. We all know that. In fact, that's probably what most of us think of when we think of Benjamin Franklin. He spent a lot of his later years in London as a representative of the Pennsylvania Assembly. He came back to Philadelphia when the Revolution started, and he was part of the 5-member committee that helped draft the Declaration of Independence. Later, he was sent to France to enlist their help in the war against England, and he also helped negotiate the Treaty of Paris that ended the Revolutionary War. So the man was there through all of it. Finally, even at the end, he becomes a delegate to the Constitutional Convention and is actually there when the Constitution is drafted and signed. Now, some last unusual facts before we wrap this one up and then go to another segment where we'll talk about some of his quotes and how they apply to home improvement. So, one unusual fact that completely caught me off guard and I thought was kind of hilarious when I thought about it. Benjamin Franklin was inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame in 1968. Did you know that? I bet you didn't, because I picture Benjamin Franklin as, how's the best way to say it? Well, I guess I don't picture him as the athletic type. I guess I could say that. Nor the tan type. So I picture him swimming in just a lot of pastiness and just a lot of it, if you understand what I'm saying. So to picture him floundering through the waves is basically how I would picture it, floundering through the waves. But apparently, the man was an astute swimmer. He was known as a tremendous swimmer. He swam the Thames River, performing, and this is a quote from the page of the International Swimming Hall of Fame, where they describe his induction into that. They quoted that he swam the Thames River, quote, performing on the way many feats of activity, both upon and under the water, that surprised, and here's the key word, and pleased those to whom they were novelties. So, while I might have found great pleasure in laughing and enjoying Benjamin Franklin as I picture him floundering through the water, the actual reality was he was like a dolphin, zipping through the waves with skill tantamount to Aquaman. So he's in the Hall of Fame for swimming. Who'd have thought? He also was the only person to have signed all 4 key documents establishing the U.S. The Declaration of Independence, the Treaty of the Alliance with France, the Treaty of Paris establishing peace with Great Britain, and the U.S. Constitution. The only one to have signed all 4 of those. Another thing that's interesting is he embraced the abolition of slavery way ahead of almost everybody else. He was president of the first abolition organization, the Philadelphia Abolition Society, and he was the first person to petition Congress to abolish slavery in 1790. When he died, the French National Assembly declared a day of mourning, and he's been called the only president of the United States who was never president of the United States. He's a remarkable historical figure, a remarkable human being, really. He's certainly flawed. You know, there were plenty of stories of how flawed Benjamin Franklin was, but he's utterly inspiring and remarkable, and because of that, he's really worth listening to, which brings us to some of his witty sayings and how they apply to home improvement, which we'll get to after a break. Stick around.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back, and I have no idea if you can hear this or not. In fact, I suspect that you can't, because it normally seems that the sound doesn't carry all the way through the microphones and into your homes, which, let me assure you, is a blessing for you all. For me, I am in a studio that is right next to a wood shop, and normally we're able to work things out so that there's not the sound of a wood shop in full operation going while we're trying to record a show. Well, today is not one of those days where we were able to work that out. We've got a guy working furiously to create, you know, sales counters and some storage cabinets and stuff for our new Byron Center location. And he's got to get those things done because we're hoping to open that store in early August. So if you've driven by a location in Byron Center and you've seen a Repco Light sign, yes, you can rest assured there will be a store there. It will be opening early August, and it will have some amazing counters that are being created right now as we speak. So a lot of noise is being generated, a lot of sawing, and hopefully no yelling or screaming from any injuries that occur. If that happens, I will promise to finish this segment before I run to the aid of the craftsman. No, that's not true. I would run to the aid immediately and probably pass out if something bad has happened. So let's hope everything stays exactly as it is. Let's get to the Benjamin Franklin quotes about home improvement. And before I get to the first one, I just want to mention that there's an article that I found that gave me this idea. And while all the quotes were different from the ones I'm going to talk about, it was still the idea that got me going. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to check it out. The first quote, "Tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn." Learning takes involvement, right? It takes hands-on. We can watch a million things or listen to a million things, and we don't learn. We don't technically learn until we jump in and do it. How many times haven't you jumped into something that you've watched or read about, and then you find all the little details, all the little things that you didn't expect or that the video didn't show you, or you know, you couldn't see it from a certain angle, and as you're working with it, all of a sudden, things that you were unclear about in the video make perfect sense. It's because you're learning now. There, you're getting a concept. Here, you're actually doing it and you're learning. How does that apply to us? It's really, really basic. In order to learn anything, you've got to jump in and do it. Watching a video on YouTube about how to do whatever it is only going to take you so far. You've got to jump in and actually get your hands dirty and try the process. And when I talk about that, I think instantly about home repair services in Grand Rapids. We are so lucky to have an organization like that in our area, because if you're unfamiliar with them, they've been on the show a number of times. What they do, their whole goal, their whole mission is to create homeowners who are better homeowners, who know how to handle whatever comes up in their homes. They've got all kinds of, amongst a million other things that they do, they've got classes that they run, free classes every Saturday. Now, with COVID, I'm not sure exactly what's playing out with that. Check their website out for a schedule and see how they're handling those things. But in normal circumstances, they've got hands-on classes every single Saturday. We've talked about it before. They're free. You can go and learn how to repair drywall. You can learn how to do electrical work. You can go and learn how to do plumbing. You can learn how to install ceramic tile. And you do all of these things by actually doing them. You use your hands. You use the right tools. When you go home, you can repair those things at your home because you've done them. Check out those classes if you bring a friend in to help you with something sometimes, because that friend knows how to do whatever it is. Stick around. Help them. Don't just be the tool getter, you know, the gopher, Dad always called it. Be there to actually get your hands dirty. Start the process, because then you'll learn and you can do the thing yourself. It's the whole give a friend a fish, teach somebody to fish thing. What about our kids? Huge here. It's absolutely huge. It's so easy to, and it's so tempting, and it's so natural to want to yank the tools out of our kids' hands. You know, a lot of us as parents or grandparents want to have our kids help us on a project, right? So we put the tools in their hands, and then we watch them. And then we yank the tools back out of their hands because they're never going to get the project done. It's going to take till next week Sunday before they finally got that screw in. And yet, if we constantly do that, they're not learning. They're not being involved. So let them be a part of it. Involving is where they learn. And it's so important for kids to start picking up these skills, because we've got generations now that we've created that don't have some of these skills. And it's a little bit scary. The trades have dropped off. If we get our kids involved and they see the satisfaction of repairing and fixing and doing the work, who knows what happens with the trades? And it all starts with us at home. Let them be involved. Let them help with the decorating. They can do it. Let them help with the painting. That sounds scary, but I've had my kids help me and I've been stunned. You know, I started with some simple projects that it didn't matter too much if they messed it up too badly. You know, as long as they didn't go crazy, we'd be okay. And I was blown away at how well they did with just some instruction and some help. And from that point on, they were able to tackle some other things on their own. Now, maybe that's not your thing. Maybe that's not where you're comfortable. But let them start working. Let them get involved, because that's where they're going to learn. Second quote, by failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. Again, so basic here. But preparation is part of the work. A lot of people, a lot of us, think about preparation as an optional step. It's not. It's a necessary step. Just as painting your cabinets requires you to actually apply paint as a finished step, that's not an optional step. Neither is washing and doing the scuff sanding or applying the right primer. Those aren't optional steps. You know, if you don't do them, you are setting yourself up for failure down the road. You're not saving time. You're saving time in this one instance. But down the road, you're going to deal with a problem. And when the problem happens, it's a very big thing to fix because the foundation is poor. In order to fix the foundation, you've got to get everything off to get back to that foundation. So do it right the first time. But it's not just surface prep that we're talking about. It's also gathering the right tools, preparing for a project in that regard, gathering the right items. I don't know how many projects I've started on a whim because I had a little bit of time and I just all of a sudden had this desire to get this project done. You know, I was just this driving need to accomplish it. I see a window, I jump in and do it. But I failed to gather the right tools ahead of time because I didn't give myself time to do that. What happens in the end is I end up using the tools that I've got and making them work or trying to make them work for tools that I should have collected ahead of time. Don't do that. When you do it that way, you're going to struggle and it's not going to turn out the way you want it. The other thing to consider is getting the right information. Again, how many times don't we jump into a project without taking the time to gather the right info? Preparing. It's all about all of those things. Planning ahead, doing the prep work, gathering the right items. If you don't do those things, you're setting yourself up for failure. Another one, energy and persistence conquer all things. You know, there's enough to say about this, but I think I can sum it up quickly with not even a story, but just a gentleman that I know. He's been on the show before, Steve Norris. I worked with him at Repcolite years back. He's in his mid-70s, okay? He's nearly blind. He knows that. It's depressing to him. He can no longer see very clearly. I've watched him work on houses that he acquires, and he's inches away from the nail holes that he's trying to fill or whatever. He's got heart problems. And yet the guy has sheetrocked basements over and over. Even in his 70s, he's doing this work. He gets through it by energy and persistence, and he conquers all things. There's no excuse for the rest of us who are fit and healthy, and even for those of us who aren't fit and healthy. All of these projects can be accomplished over time if we just stick to it and dig in and do it. Now, all right, one last one. It has nothing to do with home improvement, but I love the quote. It's this: I guess I don't so much mind being old as I mind being fat and old. I hear what you're saying, Ben. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Now, we've got to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about Thomas Jefferson and decorating. That's all just ahead. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost. On News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. And before we launch into this segment about Thomas Jefferson, interior designer, I want to just mention that this was previously recorded back in April of 2018. And it was the April, the spring, that never wanted to arrive. If you remember back to then, it seemed winter was unending. And we do reference that a couple of times in the midst of this. So I wanted to let you know, when you hear us talking about spring, that's what's going on. Now, let's get to Thomas Jefferson, interior designer.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson was a really intriguing person. We all know that he was the author of the Declaration of Independence. He was our third president. He died on the 4th of July. Maybe you know that he spoke six languages. But things people don't know are that he loved books. When the British attacked the Library of Congress in 1814 and burned all the books, he gave his personal library to refill it. Do you know how many books were in there?
I do not know.
6,487.
That's way more than my 55 Hardy Boy books. And it's a way more well-rounded library.
I'm sure it is.
It's good I wasn't the third president of the United States.
It's very good.
Or a president at all.
Yes. The other intriguing thing is he was a foodie, one of the first foodies, we'll say. He was
a foodie.
Yes, it's a current term. It's okay if you don't understand.
Oh, I'm too old to understand.
Anyway, okay. He popularized things like French fries, which I know you love.
I do.
Vanilla ice cream and mac and cheese.
Where would we be without these staples?
I know.
He didn't invent them.
No, he didn't.
We're not saying that, but he did popularize them.
Yeah, he brought them back from other places.
Yep. Very cool.
Yes. He was also an architect and designer. Mm-hmm. He took over 40 years to complete his home, Monticello.
So apparently he was slow at it.
No. Wait, I found this great quote for him that kind of explains why it took so long. Putting up and pulling down is one of my favorite amusements.
And he said that in regards to
his home.
His home.
Yes.
So I bet his wife loved that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Finally, the dining room is... Oh, he's at it again. My mom did that. That's how she operated. Every time we'd come home from school, at least once a week, the back entry was a new color.
Yeah.
And there's mom's little paintbrush.
Uh-huh.
You know, the walls got increasingly smaller because of the layers of paint. But Thomas Jefferson was that.
Yeah, he was a visionary.
He would have loved Repcolite.
He would have absolutely
loved. He'd have loved our show.
Yes.
I wonder if he's listening, wherever he is.
Sure. So he was a visionary. He was obviously one of our founding fathers, president, trailblazer. But what people don't know is he was also a very cutting edge interior designer.
Which completely catches you off guard.
Yeah,
you know,
it's mind blowing.
The business cards, Thomas Jefferson, third president, visionary, interior designer. I mean, that's awesome.
It is
I'd
awesome.
Love a business
collector
card
of
like
books.
That. Yeah, collector of everything. Anyway, what Betsy's talking about is that home, Monticello, mm-hmm. that we referenced earlier, that took him 40 years to get to the point where he liked it,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yes.
But that home underwent some restoration projects in 2010.
Yeah.
And one of the one that we're most focused on in this segment right here, was the dining room.
Yeah.
See, in 1936, other restoration was done.
Yeah.
And the walls were scraped in the effort to determine what was the original color. What color did Thomas Jefferson have on the walls originally here? Mm. So they scraped the paint off very, very carefully, and they got to the point where they determined that the base color was this blue color.
Mm-hmm.
And so the walls were painted in 1936, a color called Wedgwood Blue, and we have had it that way all the way from 36 to 2010.
Yes.
And everybody has loved that color. It's on dining rooms all throughout America.
It's a beautiful color.
Turns out it wasn't the original color.
They were wrong.
In 2010, this project went underway. They did some testing. I think the testing was done in the 90s.
Yeah.
Using computers and more...
The new technology.
More high-end analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And they determined that rather than the blue, the original color was a chrome bright yellow.
Yeah. And the woman that we read about who actually went in and did all of this testing and was kind of on the cutting edge of all of this, she said she was terrified to tell people that this was really the color because people so loved that Wedgwood blue. Was everyone going to think? They were going to hate
her. She didn't know what the reaction was going to be.
Yeah.
But in the interest of historical accuracy, the repaint went ahead and it opened to the public in 2010. And like we said, the dining room was now this brilliant chrome yellow.
Yes.
A vivid contrast, remarkable contrast to that previous muted blue that we knew as Wedgwood blue.
Yeah, so the result of all of this, if you do a side-by-side comparison and actually look at these two rooms with the furnishings in there but the two different colors, it is amazing the difference. Now, yes, I love Wedgwood blue. It's a beautiful color, and the room was beautiful painted that. But when you put that chrome yellow in there, it takes it to a whole new level, and that room is stunning.
Right, and that's the interesting thing. The room went from looking really good.
It was beautiful.
Everybody loved it.
Yep.
To something way beyond
Holy
that.
Holy cow, yeah.
And the bottom line that we want to talk about on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, as we transition now to the actual decorating part of this, the bottom line is that a bold color can take a beautiful room and make it stunning. Now, most people out there have rooms in their home that we would say are beautiful. You know, it's exactly the way we want it.
Yep.
Whatever color is on the wall, we decided that's exactly what we love. And the tendency is to think that we nailed it. You know, that room's done, we can move on.
Right.
But maybe it's time to take a lesson from a founding father and the guy who brought ice cream, or at least popularized ice cream here. Take a lesson from him. Maybe it's time to stretch a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's time to buck the trend and try this yellow. It will brighten everything up in this slightly dull time that we have with the weather outside. So a lot of people are probably sitting there thinking, well, how on earth do I bring yellow into my decorating? I mean, it's just one of those.
Why?
Well,
you know, just because Thomas Jefferson did it isn't really reason to do it.
In my book, that is a reason to do
but
it.
But there are other reasons.
There are other reasons.
Yellow is a color that makes us happy. I mean,
yeah, instantly.
There's this whole color psychology thing.
Yep.
And sometimes it feels very, very touchy-feely to me. But there is a component of that that's absolutely true.
Right.
When we're surrounded by yellow, you know, the sun is yellow, the mm-hmm. warmth, it just gives this idea and this feeling, this atmosphere of warmth, of spring, of happiness. All of that comes from yellow.
Well, it can instantly infuse your space with a feeling of life and of energy. It just gives us that uplifting mood that we
need right now on this 104th day of January.
Longest January ever.
Yes. Do you ever remember a January that went this long?
No, I really am sick of it.
Yeah, holy cow.
Yes.
So the yellow can warm up our moods. It can bump up our spirits a little bit.
Right.
But it can be a little bit tricky to work with. And that's what we want to wrap up with here today. And the trick to working with yellow mm-hmm. in your decorating is to use it appropriately and understand what it's doing.
You know, right.
Understanding yellow, what we mean by that is this. You understand what the undertones do. Now, every color is the color that you see on the surface.
Right.
But there are always undertones.
Yeah.
You know, colors beneath it that influence it. And what I mean by that is the yellow could lean towards the reds.
Yeah, the red undertones.
That's a red undertone mm-hmm. and it influences it in a certain way, making
right.
it a little more warm, a little more inviting.
Right. That's something, if it's a warmer yellow, that you can use on walls, big pieces of furniture, you can use a lot of that. A yellow with blue undertones makes it a little bit cooler, and you want to use that sparingly. Maybe small accessories and maybe really small pieces of furniture, but you don't necessarily want to paint your walls that because it just makes it cold instead of that warm, inviting feel.
But even in those little amounts, it's going to do remarkable things in a room.
Right.
Bright yellows, probably keep those out of bedrooms and offices.
Yeah.
They tend to disrupt sleep
mm-hmm.
and concentration a little bit, but they're perfect for a dining room.
As you know, perfect Jefferson if you wanna, showed us.
Right. Create energy and conversation.
Right. It's great. And a buttery yellow, a real pale yellow, things like that, they can work as neutrals. They're beautiful as a neutral because you can put so many other colors with it.
Right. If you're nervous, you start with small accents, with vases, picture frames, a bowl full of lemons. It's something mm-hmm. that decorators do all the time to put a little yellow in a room without overpowering a space.
Right.
Use throw pillows, a bedspread, things like that. Simple things to bring the color in. If you're a little more bold, you could actually go for an accent wall.
Or you can paint a whole room and be Thomas Jefferson bold, which I would like to try sometime, by the
right.
way.
But remember, to be Thomas Jefferson bold doesn't mean that you have to go crazy with this really bright chrome yellow that he chose. Even a soft buttery yellow, a barely there yellow,
mm-hmm.
right? Isn't that what you called it?
Yes,
I
barely
feel weird
there.
Saying that. Would you say that part?
A barely there yellow?
Yes, that yellow. It's still something that will make a huge impact on a room.
Right. So now you might be asking yourself, how do you actually pick the right yellow? It isn't really difficult to get started. Look at magazines, maybe look at clothing, fabrics, things like that. Find the yellows that you're drawn to and start collecting those. Then bring them into the store and we can help you find some color chips that might coordinate with that or at least get you started.
Right. Finally, use other colors to ground your yellows. You know, what we mean by that is gray, for example, is very popular right now. And that looks great
yep.
with yellow accents.
Yeah.
Natural wood tones can look amazing with buttery yellow walls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like rust reds can be used in your carpets or in rugs, more likely,
right.
and furniture to tone down yellow walls.
Yeah, it's great because a lot of people already have those grays and those neutral palettes going. So you can just bring in a little bit of that yellow, paint one wall yellow, and you're right on trend with Thomas Jefferson.
The bottom line is simply this: stretch. Be a little bit creative. I know we live in a conservative area when it comes to color, but we can still stretch a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Try some new things. Check out our show notes page for this episode.
Yeah.
And you'll see links to some Pinterest pages that Betsy put together that demonstrate all kinds of different rooms making all kinds of use of yellow.
There are some very cool things in there. You should go and check it out.
Definitely check it out. You can find it online at repcolite.com. And while you're there, you might as well download all of the past episodes so that you can play them over and over again today as the soundtrack for your 4th of July festivities. I'm sure the guests will appreciate it. Everybody will learn a lot. And who knows how much fun is going to be had when that's playing nonstop. You can find all of that online at repcolite.com. Remember that all of the Repcolite stores are closed today so that we can spend some time with our families, and we'll be back open on Monday to do it all again. Whatever you do today, make sure paint's a part of it if you can. Have a great 4th of July, and thanks for listening.